Hello, I'm Keith.
And I'm Matt. And in this one, we're going to be having a New Year's catch-up and answering some questions.
We hope you enjoy the podcast. So, Matt, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Keith. Did you have a good Christmas?
I did, thank you. Yeah, it was good. It was pretty chilled. How about you?
Lovely. Yeah, nice, thank you. I've totally lose track of timelines, but I'm pretty sure Christmas was cancelled the year before, so I was on my own for it. So yeah, it was really nice to do the whole big Christmas thing again, and so much easier from the new house to see everyone.
So did you get any new tools or anything exciting?
I got some new track for my track saw. Necessary, but I wouldn't say exciting. I think that's the trouble when you get to our age. You ask for things that you'd probably end up buying anyway. And I got some good quality Sacketeers that I want to chop the tree down in my garden.
When I took down a tree in my garden, I used a reciprocating saw to do most of that work.
I actually got rid of my reciprocating saw when I moved in my downsizing, and it's a tool that I find I never picked up.
Yeah, same.
So I bought it for one project and then never used it again.
So what track saw are you running now?
I bought a Bosch circular saw, battery 18 volt, because I needed it when I was doing some DIY for family. But it runs on a track as well, so it can kind of... It's not a plunge saw, but it is a track saw. I got rid of the Festool one because I thought I can't justify having both. But I probably would like to get the Bosch 18 volt plunge saw as well. And it is a nice track system it has. I've got a cabinet making with MDF project coming up, so we'll see how this performs. But with my workshop build and my mum wants a garden room, a battery circular saw is going to be so useful. As actually that kind of construction work, a plunge saw is not necessary at all.
Yeah, it's great just to grab a circular saw and a speed square or whatever and just make some cuts to stud work or stud timber, whatever.
If you're doing cabinets, they need to be, you know, sub-millimeter perfect, getting the panels the same as when you're building a shed. If you're one mil over one way, it makes no difference whatsoever.
Mm. The track saw rails that you got, are they the 1.4 meter ones, and are they compatible with other saws?
No. I think it's a strange system, as in, I might be totally wrong, but I think the Bosch saws will work on the Festool rails, but you can't use the Bosch rails with Festool saws. So they're much skinnier than all the other rails, but the joining system is so superior.
That's the thing that I really struggle with my Evolution rails, is the two joining bars, and trying to get the two tracks aligned with one another is an absolute nightmare. I've looked at buying one of the 3 meter tracks, which I'd really like to get, but I think the cheapest I could find was the Makita one, and that was about £160. And £160 for a long piece of aluminium just seems a little bit much to me.
Yeah. It's crazy. I prefer the Bosch rail lengths as well. So I've got 800 mil, which is a really nice... Because I think the shortest Festool one is 1200.
Yeah.
Which is quite long when you're just using it on the bench to cut something small.
Yeah.
And then I think what I got for Christmas was the 1400. So those join together. And then there's your 1600 as well. Yeah, so it's the Bosch and the Maffel use the same system.
And how does the joining system work?
It has one large flat bar that stores in the rail, and then it's got these little cam screws, which you either use a big screwdriver or you can pretty much use a penny, I should think, to twist them. And it just seems much more secure. But I just got a rail square for it as well. From Bench Dogs, no affiliation to any of these companies, but I had the other rail square, I can't remember, the TSO one, which seemed nice. The Bench Dogs one is a thing of beauty. It really is a lovely made thing. I've not used it yet. I turned up today, but it's nice. Do you have a rail square?
No, I was speaking to Ralph about one. I think he was like prototyping the design to see if it would fit on the Evolution rails or something along those lines. But I never heard back from him in the end, and I never chased him either, because I'm actually all right just with running one of the larger speed squares up against the track. I find it doesn't take any additional time, and to be honest, if I got one, I would probably end up wanting to buy more tracks to go with it, because I'd want it to be permanently fitted so that I could just grab it and use it. So I'm not sure. And also, I don't really know what I'm doing with the whole plunge saw situation at the moment, because as much as I love my Makita saw, there's still the possibility that Milwaukee will be releasing one at some point, and it would be really nice to get to that dream point of just using one battery for all of my tools. So there were loads of rumours circulating that Milwaukee would be releasing that last year, but it never happened, so who knows?
Yeah, they're really behind not having one. It's such a essential tool these days. I just got this trend stuff, so I was going all with Bosch, and now I have two. But even between those two brands, they don't cover every single tool I would want. Also, do you know what the rail situation would be with Milwaukee? Hopefully it'd be the standard kind of Makita Festool ones.
I have an inkling that they will do their own thing. And the only reason I say that is because they sent me a circular saw a couple of years ago that runs on rails. I haven't used it much, mainly because it just kicks up dust everywhere. It would be fine for carpentry jobs or something where you're working outside, but in a workshop, you really want the sealed unit and, you know, the convenience of being able to plug in a vacuum and get all of your dust away. And those rails are their own design. They're unlike any I've ever seen before, so I don't think they're going to be using one of the standard designs.
Interesting. The other thing I'd say with the rail square is, obviously, as they only fit one type of rail, you couldn't have Evolution and then Makita, and you have to really commit to a rail system.
Yeah.
Even though they're compatible with the saw, I really liked it for what I do. But also, it's my main saw at the moment. It's kind of my only powered saw is a rail saw. So I'm using it for everything.
Yeah.
Are those acoustic panels on your wall behind you?
They are. You spotted those, did you?
I did.
I made those over the Christmas period, and I cannot believe how much of a difference they've made. I was actually expecting them to not really have any effect, but I've put two up. I like the way the room sounds so much more now that I think I'm going to make a third as well. And I didn't film making the last two, so I think because they've worked so well, I'll probably make a third and hang that up too and make a video about it.
Well, I was going to do the same, so I'd be very interested to watch yours. That looks really nice fabric you got on that. So it actually looks like a more of an art piece than just an acoustic panel.
Yeah, I was going through fabric websites for hours trying to find something that I liked and that would fit with the room.
It helps with any room, doesn't it? If you like creating music or even watching TV, you don't want the room to be echoey, and it can really improve things. Especially now if most people have laminate floors rather than carpets.
Have you started any new projects in your new place?
I've not really, because I got back last week and then I caught up with emails and all the usual admin stuff, and then I kind of planned my projects and placed lots of orders for materials and things for really the next kind of almost 2 months projects, and I'm still waiting on bits to turn up. But I think also it's just sometimes it's hard to get back into it, isn't it, after you've had a little break. Have you started work this year?
Just before Christmas, I think I started the project that I've just finished, which was making a super king-sized bed, which has been a really good project to get my teeth into, because obviously I was going through a bit of a weird burnout phase in December, and I thought going away on holiday in early December was going to kind of make everything feel good again. But when I got back, still wasn't right. And I just couldn't get motivated to do anything work-related at all. So I kind of sat about the house for a few days and then realised that I felt even worse than I did before because I wasn't being productive. And my happiness usually relates to how productive I am. And because I wasn't doing anything, I was just feeling even more down. So eventually I started doing some admin work, website updates, financial accounts, all stuff like that. And then I decided that I would kind of go back into the workshop and just build a few things, without filming them, just a few small projects and workshop organization and tidying and things like that. And then I started feeling pretty good. So I thought, well, I might as well start making something again, because all the time I'm looking at my YouTube analytics app and revenue and subscribers is 20% down just from not uploading for 3 weeks or 2 or 3 weeks at that point. So I started filming the bed project, and then I felt for some reason like I had my mojo back all of a sudden, and I was really enjoying it. But it's been a bit of a nice learning experience, really, because just from stopping doing anything, I've kind of learned that that's the way to actually find out what the source of the problem was. And the source of the problem for me was purely just uploading on a weekly basis and not getting off that kind of routine. Now I know that, I can kind of make adjustments to what I'm doing with the channel. So I'm about to release a vlog, basically going to say that there is no weekly upload schedule anymore. I'm just going to upload stuff as and when I feel ready, because on this project I've really taken my time over it, and the quality of my work is much better, because usually what I would have done is got halfway through the project and then thought, I need to change the design, simplify it in some way so that I can get the next video out. But because I didn't have a deadline at the end of it, I thought, well, I can just do exactly what I set out to do in the first place. And it was just really nice. And then at that point, I knew what I'd been doing wrong and I can make steps to rectify it. So that was quite enlightening, really.
That's great. I think the old upload schedule thing was something important years ago on YouTube, but it's not important anymore. I think it works for me. But it's great, isn't it? We all do things that work for ourselves, and that's kind of the key to being self-employed, isn't it? You just I imagine building a big double bed's quite a challenge. I mean, you've got a nice big workshop, but even in that space, working with pieces that big must have been a bit of a challenge.
Yeah, but because the bed is dismantleable, you could kind of work on one section of it at a time. But towards the end of the project, I set the bed up in the workshop so that I could do the final kind of denibbing and final coat of finish. And I could barely move. I looked back at your video when you made a bed, actually. Do you still have that bed? Is that the one you're still using?
Yeah, still sleeping in it, moved with it. And actually, when I came to move, it took me all of 10 minutes to demolish the whole bed and 10 minutes to put it all back together, and it's solid as a rock. So yeah, it's fine.
While I was building the bed, I needed to get 2 sheets of 18mm plywood, and obviously it's just to put the mattress on, because this mattress needs a solid base rather than a slatted base. And I thought, 2 sheets of 18mm, it's going to be expensive, but I'll just buy it, it doesn't matter. My local timber merchant quoted me £104 for just the softwood shuttering ply, the really crap stuff. So ended up going to Wix, and while I was in Wix, they had 2 sheets of 12mm ply on a discount trolley, priced at £20 each. Hardwood plywood, it's not good quality by any stretch of the imagination, but it was reduced to £20, so I ended up buying 2 sheets of 12mm hardwood ply, and then reinforcing it by gluing on lots of salvaged bed slats underneath, just to save myself £60.
Yeah, it's good. And I guess you got your discount at Wix as well.
I didn't actually. No, I asked about it, and they said because it's discounted items, they don't apply the 10%, unfortunately.
So can you get full sheets in your van or on your van?
Well, there's an interesting story there. I bought this plywood and I came out with the trolley. And during the time I was inside Wix, it had started to rain and I wasn't aware of that. So when I got out, the plywood started getting really wet. So I panicked and I thought, what am I going to do here? Because my plan was just to put it on the roof rack, which I'd recently put on top of the van. So I thought, I'm just going to have to try and fit it in the van while it's raining so heavily. So I put the front seat down, folded down all of the back seats. I actually managed to get in 2 full sheets of 12mm ply and 1 sheet of 6mm ply inside. And I shut the doors and kind of waited for the rain to finish. It didn't finish raining though, so I ended up driving round to the B&Q car park, which is not too far from Wix in Norwich. And they had a trolley park without any trolleys in it, with a roof over the top. So I pulled up my car to that trolley park, took all of the plywood out, And luckily I'd brought my track saw with me just in case I needed to make any cuts. Made a few rip cuts and managed to fit it all in the car. So yeah, crisis averted.
It's moments like that where I wish I had like a GoPro action cam thing so I could just turn it on, because it's for like a vlog. It's just, this is the time I cut down sheet goods in a trolley park.
Yeah. All the while I was doing it, I was expecting some security guard to come out and say, what exactly are you doing over there? But I got away with it, fortunately.
They don't care.
You're absolutely right. It would have been really good as part of a video, but I didn't have my camera. I had my mobile, but I didn't even think to film it. I was in a panic state of mind.
Yeah. Oh, I'm impressed you can get them in, full sheets in.
Yeah, and I drove about probably 200 metres down the road with the full sheets in, but my head was kind of at this angle while I was driving, yeah. So it wasn't optimal for safety, but it can be done in a pinch.
And you can probably see nothing to the left either.
Yeah, exactly.
I've done that before. It is not ideal. I remember used to go and pick up pallets, and I used to have to move the front seat so far forward in my hatchback that my knees were around my ears, and it was just along one straight bit of road, but like, this is not good.
I remember when I had a Vauxhall Corsa and I went to my local reclamation yard and bought several lengths of 4x2 or 3x2, I can't remember, loading them into the car, sort of the back end balanced on the parcel shelf and the front end on the actual dashboard at the front of the car. Mm. And shut the boot, and then I had this smash, and I looked over and the windscreen had completely smashed through.
No.
Yeah. Fortunately, it was covered on insurance, and I don't think I even paid an excess on that, because for windscreen damage, my policy at the time basically covered that, so I was really lucky there.
That was lucky. Yeah. The money you saved on that reclaimed material wouldn't have paid off that day.
Too true.
That's another thing. I've never had a battery saw, so all those years I went and picked up things, having a battery circular saw would have just changed everything. I'd have cut down so many things before putting it in the car.
Yeah, they're so useful.
Tomorrow, no excuses. So what I'm going to build is like an MFT table. So I know you've got one, and what I did is I just bought one off eBay that's been CNC'd, and then I'm going to make a way of attaching it to my normal workbench, so when I want to do that kind of work, it can sit on top of my workbench and be stored away when I don't want to use it.
That sounds like the dream, and I've been thinking about a similar kind of idea recently, because as much as I've said in the past that I want to get rid of my MFT table because it's a nightmare of losing screws and small parts through those holes, and I don't really use it that much, I find that the ability to be able to put some dogs in the MFT holes and some dogs in my vice jaws and clamp a board in for, you know, flattening it with a hand plane or something along those lines, I find that really useful. And then I saw that you can buy basically a square of MFT top really cheap in odd places like eBay.
Mm. Yeah, amazingly cheap considering it's moisture resistant MDF, and mine came with some dogs for about £60. It might be plus postage. The trouble is, yeah, I want both. I want a traditional workbench with a solid top and then an MFT, because if you hit anything with a chisel and a hammer or anything on an MFT, it's like hitting the skin of a drum. It's so loud. So I want a solid workbench. And I think this is going to give me the best of both worlds. And it's an achingly simple solution. I'm basically just going to plonk it on top.
That sounds like a great idea. Hello, Keith here. Just interrupting to let you know that we have a Patreon page. We don't earn any money for making this podcast, and it takes us quite a lot of time and money to prepare and produce each episode, and we'd like to keep putting it out for free. If you'd like to help support it, there'll be a link to the page in the show notes, or just search online for Workshop Banter Patreon. We also want to say a big thank you to everyone who has signed up already. We really appreciate it. So Matt, do you have any New Year's resolutions?
I haven't actually, but I definitely have some plans for this year. I think the first one is probably maybe try and work less, as in I worked loads 2 years ago when it was lockdown because I was on my own, there was nothing else to do. Then last year there was lots of work and then the house move. And like, so I haven't enjoyed myself, I feel, for 2 years particularly. I like where I am now in the house. It's nice being with a train station so I can get out interesting places. So I think I'm going to try and, you know, take the odd weekend off instead of actually working 7 days a week.
Oh, very nice, yeah.
But the other thing is, something that I know you've been doing is putting your video content onto other platforms. So I've been re-editing those. So the business thing I'm going to do is I'm re-uploading old videos, which I never thought I'd want to re-look through. And they're pretty cringy when you look at something you shot 5 years ago, but it's interesting at the same time. It's interesting to see you've got better, because you don't realise you've got better at something until you look again at the old stuff. Yeah, I've been doing that. Business-wise, I've got all these projects planned. Same question to you then. Any New Year's resolutions, business or otherwise?
Similarly to you, not necessarily working less, but enjoying myself more. I'm going to try and make a conscious effort to actually enjoy what I do. Yeah, I just think I've got my dream job now. Why am I spiraling into bouts of minor depression every so often? Why don't I just enjoy it? Other than that, I definitely need to do something about my website. I was on Reddit recently. I've only just discovered Reddit. I was speaking to some web designers on there about websites and stuff, and I've never really understood websites, the back end of them, how it all works. And a couple of web designers on there offered to look at my website and give me some critique on it, and the stuff that came back was quite shocking about how bad it actually is. So I think this year I'm going to try and find some professional to do it for me and take that burden off my hands if possible.
Excellent. Yeah, I had a friend looking at mine the other day and it made me realise, well, actually, I update it almost weekly, but all the photos were 5 years old and I haven't done anything with it. You're saying you want to enjoy things. So if you don't enjoy the website, yeah, farm it out to someone else. Hopefully this new video schedule for you will help you enjoy it. But I do know the feeling about enjoying it, because every project you think you want to do, you always ask your question, will it be popular? Do people want to see that? And so you don't always do the projects you want to do. You do the projects that are perhaps going to perform well, which is a bit frustrating sometimes.
It's trying to get that balance of whether it's a hobby or a job, isn't it? And am I doing this to pay the bills?
I mean, we don't do this to pay... Well, we need it to pay the bills, but it's not the reason we started it, is it?
Exactly right. And that's the kind of discovery I had over Christmas when I was trying all of these different things to try and get myself out of this weird burnout thing. It was when I started woodworking that I immediately felt better, but then I realised that I was woodworking without the pressure of YouTube and filming and editing and all of that stuff. And that's kind of when I remembered that, oh yeah, this was actually a hobby once. This was what I did to escape everything else. The woodworking side of things actually pulled me out of burnout, which is quite ironic because that's my job, if that makes any sense.
No, it makes perfect sense to me, because I know if I ever do something and aren't filming it, what an absolute treat it is to just enjoy the one thing. And I enjoy video making, actually. If I was filming, well, if I came and filmed you work, I'd really enjoy just video making, and I really enjoy just woodworking. Trying to do them both at the same time, I feel you don't do either as well as you could, and it takes the enjoyment away from both.
Yeah.
And that's a complicated thing to get around.
I've got a couple of questions here from a chap called Tim. The first one is, wood glue PVA versus polyurethane glue. What are your thoughts, Matt? Have you used the polyurethane glue before?
I used it for my workshop floor because it was recommended, because it's got a bit of flex in it, so it stops you having creaky floorboards, and none of them ever creaked, I have to say, in the 3 years I was there. Stupidly, when I used it in a like a silicone gun, and I didn't put gloves on, and came in, washed my hands, and my hands were just black, and I couldn't work out what it, and it was just a thin layer of glue, and it was just, I've never had anything like it. The most horrific hands, just horrible.
I've had that so many times as well. I ended up trying to scrape it off with a knife, but even that doesn't work.
So that was definitely a lesson learned, but it was great for that application. I've tried it in a bit more kind of joinery, especially when I've cut awful joints and they're a little loose, and you think kind of this gap filling one, but and it does kind of fill the gap, but I feel if you wiggle the joint, it just compresses because it's like a foam and then becomes loose. So no, I only use PVA really. What have you used it for then?
So I tend to only reach for the polyurethane glue for three reasons. One would be temperature. It works in low temperature, so it's quite handy if it's sort of under 10 degrees in the workshop. Two would be exterior use, because I think the PVA that I tend to buy is weatherproof, but I don't know how waterproof it is, whereas I know polyurethane glue works really well outside. And three would be just speed, because the PU stuff that I buy sets in 30 minutes. You can also buy some stuff that sets in 5 minutes. So if I want something glued really quick, then I'll reach for it occasionally as well. But yeah, the downsides, like you said, are the cleanup. It foams out all over the place. If you get it on your hands, it's a nightmare to get off. The benefit of PVA glue is the working time you get. I think sometimes if you're doing a complicated glue up and a difficult assembly, you kind of want that extra time to be able to get things where they need to be before the glue sets up. So that's where PVA really works well.
Yeah, I would say there's different options for both, isn't it? Because I've used, like, I think you can get a 5 minute PU and a 30 minute, and I think PVA you can get a 10 minute one, a 30 minute one. I tend to use the 10 minute one only, and I find it never goes off in 10 minutes.
Unless it's really hot.
Yeah, and it's been in a clamp for 10 minutes, but kind of the actual putting something together, it's not going to go off. But yeah, the squeeze out, I guess it's a learning curve. I've never used enough of the PU to work out exactly how much to put in a joint so that it doesn't foam out everywhere.
Mm.
And then obviously when you first use it, your initial temptation is to wipe up the excess straight away, which is definitely a huge mistake.
Yeah.
A bit like expanding foam. Leave it. Never touch it.
Exactly right. Yeah, let it foam up and do its thing and then clear it up once it's dry. Your point about it being a gap-filling glue as well is really good, because I used to think that it would work really well as a gap-filling glue, but you're absolutely right, it doesn't. I tend to reach for epoxy if I need a good gap-filling glue nowadays, because then it kind of, you get that resinous bond between the two surfaces, yeah, which works better.
And in more construction, I'm a big fan of grip fill.
Oh,
the green tubes of grip fill, but it does what it says on the tube. It grips and it fills. I remember I built some stairs for a shepherd's hut once, and I realised I'd done something wrong after about 20 minutes and tried to take it apart, and then got the hammer, then got the biggest mallet I could, and I could not break it.
Really?
Yeah.
So I wonder if grip fill is a similar thing to the polyurethane construction adhesive that John Heiss always reaches for.
Yeah, it's very thick grip fill, as you get the no more nails, and that's much more silicon or chalky gun consistency, but the grip fill is really, it's like Play-Doh almost. It's very thick. In fact, I've broken a couple of guns because it needs so much force, well, especially if you've used a tube that you've opened before and put it back in.
Excellent. Nice bit of glue talk there. Tim has also asked about machine blade choices, and I'm going to keep quiet on this one purely because I've got a video planned about table saw and circular saw blades in general. I'm not going to touch on bandsaw blades in the video because I've always felt like I've not yet found the perfect bandsaw blade. I've tried 5 or 6 different ones now from a reputable supplier, and they've all been okay, but I still feel like the Holy Grail might be out there somewhere. And I think I was watching a Matt Cremona video recently, and he mentioned carbide tooth bandsaw blades that are, I think, about 2 or 3 times the price, but they last 8 to 10 times longer. So I think the next bandsaw blade I buy might invest in something a little bit nicer. What do you think about bandsaw blades?
I've used Tough Saws website for blades. I've always found them pretty good, and they're always amazingly cheap, as in even when I had that big cast iron bandsaw, I think the meat blade was exactly, I think it might have been 12 feet, it might have been 12 feet long, and that was like £16. You can't believe the price of them. But yeah, carbide would be great. I think the problem is the Americans seem them easy to get. I cannot find someone in the UK that sells them.
Oh, okay. I haven't looked yet.
Helical head planers as well. I would love one, and the Americans can get the conversions for all their ones. You can't get them over here. I think there's a brand that do it, but they all look made for cutting metal, as in America. There seem to be all these specialist wood-cutting ones. But yeah, I would love to be able to set my bandsaw up and just know that every time I went to use it, it would just work.
Yeah.
I think what I've learned with bandsaws is people say, oh, it's not cutting well. And I say, is the blade new? And like, oh yeah, I've only used it a few times. But sometimes you can just twist it, or it hits a knot and it knocks one of the teeth out slightly, and it's ruined. It's not like a circular saw blade. They're so temperamental.
Yeah, they do dull so quickly in comparison to a carbide tooth table saw blade or something like that. I mean, I've cut through countless nails and screws on my table saw, and the teeth still look fine. One or two of them have got a small chip on them, but nothing that I'm worried about.
Mm.
I just wish I could find a bandsaw blade that was as robust. In terms of tooth count, though, I've always found sort of 3 or 4 TPI to be the sweet spot for me. Whenever I've gone any higher than that with wood, the blade has started drifting from left to right because there's not enough of a gullet in between each tooth.
Yeah, the thicker the material, the bigger, the lower the tooth count I think you need. I think if you have a 3 TPI or 4 TPI blade, it can do everything. You'll just get a rougher finish. But you're going to sand anyway. It's not like you ever come off the bandsaw and go, that doesn't need sanding. As if you have a high tooth count, okay, you get a finer finish, but there's no way you're going to cut through thick material or resaw with it. So, yeah, no one likes changing bandsaw blades. So I always keep the lower tooth count on it so I can do most things. Or just buy 6 different bandsaws.
See, when I cut anything with my 4 TPI bandsaw blade, I can't even just get away with sanding. I usually have to plane and then sand because it leaves such a rough cut. And this is why I'm thinking there must be a better blade out there, because I've seen, again, Matt Corona, I know I'm mentioning him a lot, but some of the surfaces he gets after just running something through quickly on his bandsaw, and it looks immaculate. Look, it looks almost like a table saw blade cut.
And when you say run through quickly, it really is quickly, isn't it, that he's feeding it through a bandsaw, the kind of same speed you'd feed something half the size for a table saw.
Yeah,
as when I've tried to resaw something on the bandsaw, it's very slow.
Yeah, if there's anything that I can resaw on a table saw, I'm going to be doing it that way, because resawing it on the bandsaw is just too slow, and I'm too impatient for that.
Too slow. You then got to plane both surfaces afterwards. As the table saw, you can do a thin rip and then just, with the same bit of wood, keep doing rips off it, as you wouldn't be able to do that with the bandsaw. You'd have to resurface it. Yeah.
My only problem with resawing on the table saw is that I have to remove my blade guard in order to take those cuts, and then I just get dust everywhere.
It's been on my list for years. Something I'd like to make is one of those crown guards that isn't attached to the riving knife. It's on like the scissor arm above the table.
Yes, I've seen those, yeah.
With dust collection obviously built in, I think if you could just easily move it up for when you're doing that kind of non-through cut, be really good. But your workshop would suit that. I don't have a table saw. God, I don't have a table saw. That's a crazy situation.
Tim's also asked a third question, which is, how do you cut your mortise and tenons? How do you cut your mortise and tenons?
I borrow your festal domino. Well, I just actually, I mean, I'd forgotten about this until I've made that silly joke, was I've just got the 10-minute workshop loose tenon jig, one of his prototype ones. So I've not used it yet because it turned up the day before I went away for Christmas. So yeah, I'm perhaps going to use that to make the alcove units. Before that, I'd have probably just screwed it together. Yeah, I have tried cutting mortise and tenon by hand. I've got a new drill press, or a new 1950s drill press. By the time this goes out, at least the first video will be up, if not the second. So I'm quite keen to use the drill press to start cutting the mortises and then just squaring them up with a chisel. I'm certainly not going to solely cut a mortise by hand. Tenons, again, a bandsaw does a good job of tenons. I have tried on the table saw, but the clamping and setting up and running it through seems a pain. Have you done it?
So in the early days, pretty much the same as you. I would just use a force and a bit. I wouldn't even use the pillar drill. I probably should have done, because I would have had more accurate results. But my pillar drill leaves a lot to be desired, shall we say. So I just used to use a hand drill, drill several holes with the relevant sized force and a bit, chisel out the rest, and then cut the tenon accordingly. But then after doing that a few times, it gets a bit tiresome. Few years after that, I would try and avoid cutting mortise and tenons and use some other method of joinery. I really like half lap joinery. I like bridle joints. I think bridle joints look fantastic, and it's easily done on the table saw as well, which is appealing to me.
Yeah, it's very mid-century modern as well, isn't it? Kind of the arms of a chair done with a bridle joint, something like
that. Yeah, I love the way that looks. Using dowels is another good option. And then eventually, I've got the Festool Domino, which I tend to use now. The only thing is it can't really do big, chunky mortise and tenons like the larger Domino machine would, but it does everything that I would need to do. And also sometimes I just double up the number of mortises that I cut with the Domino and throw some floating tenons in.
So yeah, I was a big fan of the dowels, but I did a video about dowels the other week. The trouble is, you have to be so accurate with them. As with the Domino and Peter's new jig, it looks like you've got that bit of play in the slot, which makes it so much easier. I actually saw something, I can't remember whether it was AliExpress or Banggood, some ad that popped up. And do you remember the dowel machine you made for your router?
That was actually a floating tenon machine.
Yeah, sorry, that's what I meant. Well, Banggood or AliExpress have taken the idea and made like an aluminium version of that.
Really?
Yeah, so it looks, and it's even got like a switch, like a trigger on it. So you plug your router into the socket and you've got a trigger to use and set the plunges.
So is that for dowels or for mortises?
Mortises, I think.
Oh, wow. I'll have to have a look at that.
Yeah, I'll see if I can find a link. I can't remember. It's one of those things, unless you can remember what they called it, you'll never be able to find it.
Yeah.
But it was an ad that kept popping up. I think they wanted something like £120 for it. So it's a big commitment on something that you might get and it might be utterly useless. But it's definitely an interesting idea.
Joseph Woodhouse asked which episode of Kirsty's Handmade Christmas Matt was on. I don't suppose you know that off the top of your head, do you, Matt?
Well, I'm so sad. I think I do. It was 2018 and it was the Handmade Christmas Gift episode. I don't know what number that was, but that was the title.
I don't know if it's available on any streaming
platforms. Is available because I was forced to watch it over Christmas.
Oh, okay.
It's there become you go, a then. Christmas tradition.
This is quite a good question as well. The question is, how do you decide what is a job that's worth doing? I have all of the tools, but sometimes I think I could just pick up whatever from IKEA for half the price of making it myself.
Do you want to take this one?
I can try. So I guess it depends on a lot of different things. It's one of those questions where the answer is going to be different for everyone, depending on the circumstances. But if you're a hobbyist and you're looking for projects to do on the weekend, for example, then I would tend to lean towards making it myself. But it's going to be different for everyone, I guess.
Yeah, I think that's very true. For me and you, because we're content creators, we're always looking for content. As I say, my clothes are in boxes. I could buy a metal clothes rail for Argos for £20 and have them, but it'd make a good video, so I'm gonna make a clothes rail. I don't think many of us get into woodworking to save money. It's very rarely cheaper to make something than what you could buy from IKEA. Okay, if you wanted fitted wardrobes, you could probably spend thousands of pounds getting a professional company to do it, so you could save money that way. But we do it for the enjoyment. So if you're not going to enjoy doing it and it's going to cost you more money, then there's no point doing it. The other thing, I guess, is sometimes you need to make something specialist you can't buy. Like my alcove units. I can't buy a unit that's going to fit my space perfectly because they're going to be different in every house. So I'm going to make it.
Yeah, one of the top questions I get on my shed video is, is this cheaper than buying one? And the answer is definitely not. It's a relatively standard size as well, the shed, so I could have simply just bought one. But it wouldn't have been as well built. I don't think it would last as long. I really enjoyed making it, and it made for a good video as well. So those were the kind of things that made up my mind for me.
They all look very shoddily made, I have to say, the ones you can buy. I think when I was in the Woodworking UK Facebook group, the biggest comment was, that shed hasn't got a big enough overhang on the roof. Yeah. That's the one thing that really wound people up. Yeah, a lot of the time you're going to get something better quality if you build it yourself. Well, depends how good you are.
Yeah, on that group as well, another common discussion is, I'm building a shed, should I use 4x2s or 3x2s? I use 2x2s, and they're still twice as thick as the stud work that you tend to get in prefabricated sheds, which are probably 1x2 at the most, I would have suggested. So, you know, the structural integrity of the building really isn't in the vertical studs at all. It's in everything being tied together as a structure. That's when it becomes a solid thing. So, yeah, don't worry too much about your uprights would be my tip.
The thickness of the uprights was the only consideration for me, more to how thick a insulation I wanted to put in workshops, but in a shed, if you're not putting any in.
Yeah, and 3x2s are probably a good choice in a lot of situations, purely because they tend to be cheaper in the UK than even 2x2s, which doesn't really make much sense. I've got a question from Adam via email about whether we've done any Christmas fairs, and if so, what type of things do well?
Ooh, I imagine he emailed a few weeks ago, but we're getting in early for next Christmas, aren't we?
Yeah.
I've never done a Christmas fair, but I have looked at them, and all the kind of towns local to me, there was one in Winchester, and they wanted insane amounts of money, you know, where they have almost like the little sheds in a row for the market, and it was something like £1,000 a day or something for a stall.
Ooh.
So I don't know what would sell well. And I suppose anything gifty, which I always used to do, booze-related stuff, because booze is always a traditional Christmas gift. I know that if you're the only person selling cutting boards at a show, you do well. Any kind of good craft fair organiser doesn't put two of the same stall in.
Yeah, the only bit of advice I would have, and I've never done a craft fair, so you might not want to take my advice, but I would prioritise low-value items, sort of under £20, I would say, is the price point where you want to be selling things at. I would try and go for quantity rather than quality, because I should imagine most people wandering around a craft fair don't carry lots and lots of money with them. And I've also heard from watching people like Worth the Effort Woodworking on YouTube, who does a lot of lathe projects, he does a lot of spinning tops and things like that, that, you know, he can knock out really quickly on the lathe, and they tend to sell really well. So if he sells, you know, 50 of those in a day, then it's probably worth his while.
No, I think that's a good point you make, because no one knows you're going to be there, so it's all impulse purchasing. People are going to do that with lower value items. But I think we're going to have a whole episode coming up about how to sell your work, so I think we'll probably cover this in slightly more detail.
Just going back to the low cost thing as well, though, I found the same to be true for Etsy as well. So the stuff that I sell on Etsy, I can sell quite a lot of low value items, but the high value items tend to stick around for months, sometimes years. Do you have any YouTube recommendations this time?
I was rewatching one from last year, actually. It was on the Four Eyes Furniture channel. It was about making a sofa lamp, one of these tall lamps that the foot goes under the back of your sofa type thing, and the lamp goes over the top so you can have a bit of light when you're reading on the sofa. But I like the idea of building something that does that, because I don't have a desk at the moment, so all my work's done on the sofa, so a bit of a lamp that goes overhead.
Maybe a future project.
What have you been watching?
I've discovered a channel called Bradshaw Joinery. Came up in my recommendations. It was a repair to an exterior door. The standard of work that he does is fantastic, and also he's got some amazing machinery in his workshop. He's also done a shipping container conversion where he's took a really long, large shipping container and converted it into kind of a storeroom outside his workshop. And he uses it for storing all of his timber. That was quite a good project as well. And he's UK-based as well, which is always nice.
I very rarely find new making channels. A few years ago, I was subscribing to a new channel each week. I don't think I do that anywhere near that anymore.
Do you know what? I think it's that the recommendation system on YouTube doesn't work anywhere near as well as it used to.
No.
So I think for finding new channels, it's now really quite difficult, which is a real shame because it means that there's loads of smaller channels out there going unnoticed, which is awful. Another good suggestion, though, that Woodworking UK group that you mentioned earlier, they do a thread every Wednesday for YouTube videos, and I've found quite a few good channels on there. So people post their weekly video. So that's quite a good way to discover some of the sort of smaller or upcoming channels.
Yeah, and it's always a discussion. People always name their favourite UK woodworkers as well. So you can always see if there's ones you've missed.
Thanks for listening. You can find Matt on YouTube by searching for Badger Workshop and me by searching for Rag and Bone Brown. Workshop Banter is on Instagram and Facebook if you'd like to get in touch with us. Or alternatively, you can email us at workshopbanter@gmail.com.